The Warriors podcast picks back up here inside team headquarters at Chase Center with Melanie Moore, the executive director of the Warriors Community Foundation and the Warriors vice president of community relations. Thank you so much for spending some time with us as we explore a variety of themes. And let's just start with generally how sports organizations have lessons that are embedded in the narratives of the sports themselves. I guess the question is, what does being an NBA team offer as advantages to our efforts in the community?
Thanks so much for having me. I think so much about teamwork when I think about the work we do in the community. And it's easy because often we are out there finding kids in gyms. We're finding kids at schools where they're on the field playing a sport. And we're there because we are looking for ways to support them. But they're actually living the experience that a lot of our players had as young people. So if you read Andre Iguodala's book, or if you talk to our players, they often started in a Boys and Girls Club, they started in a community center, or their teacher at school said, hey, I think you should come out and play. And so we are working with kids who are having those experiences now and who might themselves grow into famous athletes, or they might themselves grow into famous scientists or authors, but they're starting in the same place. And I think that the lessons that our team has and that our players really have to share themselves are super relevant to the lives of the kids that we encounter all the time.
You know, supporting the players and their efforts in the community is certainly key. And you talk about Andre's book, The Sixth Man, and he talks about growing up in Springfield, Illinois, the challenges in that community and what it meant to try to gain what we will call educational equity in that place. And then you think what the foundation here is doing, founded in 2012, over $12 million in grants have been shared with Bay Area nonprofits and a full effort to improve educational equity. As we've entered a new decade here, how have we seen this help and what do you think is ahead?
We have so much ahead, but we have so much to be proud of. So the foundation was founded when the new ownership group came in by Nicole Lakeup. And Nicole, who's the wife of Joe Lakeup, one of our principal owners, was a teacher. She was a teacher in Washington, D.C., and she's passionate about education. She's passionate about kids who are underserved having that opportunity to get ahead. I heard Steph say when he and Aisha were starting the Eat, Learn, Play Foundation that talent is evenly distributed, but opportunity is not. And I think that's a great phrase that underscores why Nicole also wanted to start a foundation that focused on education. We have been able to contribute over $12 million in the course of the last many years to nonprofits on both sides of the Bay that support education and youth development for kids. And Nicole has built a board that has very intentionally gone out and sourced organizations that are doing great work. Part of my background is actually in evaluating the effectiveness of nonprofit organizations. I did that for a number of years before I joined the Warriors. And I saw immediately when I came on board that a lot of the organizations that we're granting to are some of the best in the Bay Area. These are creative organizations like 826 Valencia. They are long-standing community organizations like Boys and Girls Club of Oakland. I mean, I could go on and on. We fund over 50 groups. But these are the groups that are really kind of the anchors for communities in the Bay, both Alameda County and San Francisco County. And we're finding them, and we're helping them every year with annual grants do what they do best, which is support kids and families. And we're also really there for them beyond the grant. It's interesting how when we go out to an organization and we buy a table at their gala, at their annual fundraiser, when we donate a signed team ball, for example, or a signed jersey, those are opportunities to connect with the team that that they don't get from other funders. So yes, we provide a grant. Other funders in the Bay provide grants as well, and that ecosystem is critical. We all work together to support these groups. But we like to say, you know, we bring a little extra, and it is that connection with the players. It's that connection with the team.
You know, you mentioned Nicole and Joe and their efforts to make a true impact with the foundation. They also, with the fundraising, like to make it fun and welcoming. I was at the first charity poker tournament night and seeing how it has evolved over the years. There was just one recently. How has it gone? What does that offer as an opportunity, not just for outreach and letting people know about the foundation, but also having a nice time doing it?
You know, a year ago when I started my role, the poker tournament was on day five of my new job. It was crazy. It was one of the most fun experiences I'd ever had. And I think it's true for a lot of the players, and certainly for the people who come, the donors who come and participate. It's an event that, you know, starts in the early evening, goes to the wee hours, and it is a knockdown, drag-out poker tournament. All the players are there. They are seriously competing against each other. We have a T-shirt for the last warrior standing. I have to say, the last couple of years, it's been Steph, so he's the player to beat. And the rest of the participants are also really playing to win. And we have a professional poker player, Phil Hellmuth, who often comes out, and he helps him see the night and kind of sets the stage for some of the micro competitions happening, like, you know, is Coach Kerr all in, or, you know, is Draymond betting up, you know, hard against Joe? Mm-hmm. And Nicole actually won the tournament, not this past year, but last year. So there's all kinds of fun drama that's happening, and our players love it. You know, they stay late into the night, and it's a good time had by all. We raise the vast majority of the funds that we grant out that night. So in the last several years, we've raised close to $2 million. This past year, we just had the tournament. We raised over $1.8 million for charity.
Wow, that is extremely impressive. And you think of how unique that is and how the grants then are shared. And I guess that would be a question. When it's that much money coming in, it's an opportunity for a variety of nonprofits to be able to be the beneficiaries. What's the process? How do the folks behind all of this identify the organizations, vet the organizations, and share these grants?
It's a super hands-on process by our staff, but also our board of directors for the Warriors Foundation. The grants are by invitation only, so a nonprofit can't just submit a proposal. They have to be invited. But they get invited because we, the staff of the Warriors Foundation, are out in the community all the time. We're meeting people. We're hearing about groups. We also, again, we know a lot of the ecosystem of nonprofits that have been around for a long time. And we make it our business to go visit them and meet their new executive directors or talk to their board. Our own board of the Warriors Foundation also goes out and they meet groups and they find out about trends in education and what's going on in the Bay. So we have an annual cycle. When programs are invited, they submit a proposal, and our board then goes on a due diligence process and really talks to the staff of that nonprofit, looks into their success over the years, looks at their performance metrics, hears the stories of the kids and the families in the programs, and then we come together and we make a decision, as any foundation does. We have our docket and we have our list of programs that we've ranked and rated, and then we have the fun opportunity of saying yes to groups, and we often will have our coaches and our players actually make the phone calls to tell the nonprofits that they got the grant. It's really fun.
You know, I think of our president, Rick Welts, and his thought process behind really one of the true tenets of what these teams should be in their communities is a real pillar for not just inspiration, but an ability to give back in a way that's actually hands-on and thoughtful. And this move to Chase Center has given the organization opportunity to do something that's really, truly unique. Generation Thrive, the former office space in Oakland, being transformed to help nonprofits have a physical space that's what I would hope is an epicenter for collaboration. What is the true hope here with Generation Thrive?
I'm so glad you asked about Generation Thrive. We are launching soon in early April. And we are going to be opening the doors of our Oakland practice facility, which used to be our front office headquarters, as a nonprofit accelerator. So we will be offering some office space to nonprofits that might need a place to locate their front office because they are getting displaced elsewhere in Oakland, for example. We are going to be offering nonprofits capacity building workshops and everything from fundraising to board development to program development. And because one of our key supporters for this work is Kaiser Permanente, and their focus is so much on Thrive and on wellness, we'll be offering wellness support in the form of mindfulness classes, yoga, at the Oakland Practice Facility. And it'll be available to the nonprofits that we support, some of the nonprofits that Kaiser supports, as well as sort of a general membership opportunity for nonprofits that serve young people. And in particular, for teachers and educators. Because of our focus on education, we want to open the doors of Generation Thrive to teachers, say, after the end of the school day, if they want to come somewhere and prep for the next day, if they want to use computer technology, if they want to take a yoga class, we'll have that available. It's a way to help retain teachers in the profession. It's a way to help nonprofits collaborate more, retain their staff in the profession. There's a high turnover rate in both of those fields. And we think that Generation Thrive is a way to help support the East Bay community in Oakland in particular in achieving their goals around helping kids by helping the adults who help the kids. In San Francisco at Chase Center, we have a couple of spaces at Thrive City. So some of the retail spaces that are out on the Esplanade are also going to be Generation Thrive, so sort of the San Francisco equivalent. And those spaces will also be used for nonprofits. So if a nonprofit wants to hold a small fundraiser, if they want to have a parent engagement workshop, if they need to have a place for a staff meeting or a board meeting, we can make that space available for free. And because we are in the business of supporting them as a foundation, as one of their donors, we want to hear from them, what other ways can we support? How can Generation Thrive be a great resource? Is there a speaker that they'd like us to bring in that they'd like to learn from? Are there opportunities for them to hold an event at one of our spaces that we hadn't thought of, but that they think is a priority? How can young people get involved? So in San Francisco, for example, some ideas have come to us about having young people run a podcast out of one of those spaces. How cool would that be? So the ideas are endless, and we're going to get started this year, and we're going to see where it goes.
Well, they'll be doing this podcast with us before you know it. And that's really cool that we're using the physical space in such a way. And the Warriors Basketball Academy using, as you said, the former practice space in a unique way, building out the area where they'll have all the camps where the Warriors once trained. And you think of this other program that's coming, the Run TMC Fantasy Camp. You know, over the years, you've seen baseball teams do this where people get to go live out their dreams and play with, you know, their favorite players from the past. But in this case, a certain generation of folks will love the chance to play with Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, Chris Mullin, Run TMC in a fantasy camp that will benefit the foundation. That's a pretty great synergy.
It's incredible. We are so excited for that event. And I don't, have you been over to see the new court?
Jeff Adiego has shown me pictures, and what seems cool is the logos from three different areas: the city court, the town court, and the Warriors logo as we know it now, with the bridge identified in the logo, all on those different courts, and now an expanded set of baskets than were once there.
Yeah, it is amazing. I just saw it yesterday for the first time, and anybody who's been over there will be amazed at the renovation. It's such an exciting place to play. I can't believe, like, if I played basketball, which I don't, I wish I did, I would totally sign up for this camp. And because it is benefiting the foundation and it's helping to create scholarships also for basketball camps for young people, it's just a win-win. It's a super great opportunity, and I'm so glad that Jeff and the camps team have put it together.
So we do sort of a This Is Your Life portion of the podcast. And in this case, we're taping during Mardi Gras, which yes, gets us thinking about New Orleans. And I know you're a New Orleans native. You spent your childhood there. You think of this vibrant community, truly a city unlike any other in the United States. It's got soul. It has challenges. They meet that with solutions. But I wonder, from all of the work that you have done, when you think of what it is to be from New Orleans, how has that helped you in your personal drive for helping communities?
That's a really great question. Certainly growing up in New Orleans, I was seeing income inequality back in the day. I mean, I'm not going to tell you how long ago, but it was a while ago. And there's nothing like coming right up against seeing poverty and seeing people who are experiencing challenges to, at least for me, to sort of make me feel empathetic and want to figure out what is my part in the solution. So I think definitely as a child, the seeds were planted around me wanting to have a career in the social sector. But also my love of basketball was born there. So my dad actually took me to my first game at the Superdome when I was probably 6 or 7 years old. And I remember that if the team scored over, this is the New Orleans Jazz, of course, back then, if the team scored over 100 points, McDonald's was going to give out free French fries. So I might have been in it for the French fries that first night, but but the excitement of watching the game really stuck. I was hooked.
you know, legendary Warriors broadcaster Jim Barnett was a member of the expansion jazz team, and that time period and what it meant. I mean, we've talked to him about that a couple of times when we go to New Orleans and I walk the streets and go to the Mr. B's restaurant in the quarter, and I take Mr. B there. But you know, to hear those stories in that time period and really what it's meant for fans there to grow, not along with just their Saints fandom, which is on a whole new level, but also what the Pelicans are starting to mean, and our former Warriors assistant coach Alvin Gentry now leading the Pelicans' efforts there as the head coach. And you think of what sports has been in that community. We'll get back to some New Orleans sports in just a bit, but Yale for college, and then a doctorate in child and adolescent development from the Stanford School of Education leads you to founding Sea Change. What were the needs that you were addressing at that time?
I started Sea Change, which was an evaluation firm serving foundations and nonprofits who were looking to explain what they did and explain why they were effective. I started it because I was trying to speak back to the field of evaluation, which was very, very quantitative. It was about creating surveys, measuring whether or not a kid's grades improved. And I felt that that approach to evaluating the effectiveness of a nonprofit missed something. It missed the secret sauce of these programs. And that secret sauce you could really only understand by the stories that were coming out of the program, the people who ran it, the young people who benefited, the teachers who were also benefiting because the kids were doing better in school. So I started Sea Change, actually, which was in part a film company. We were making films and doing evaluations of nonprofits as a way to help us remember our intuitive ways of knowing whether or not a program works. Anybody who walks into an effective nonprofit feels it instantly. You get those goosebumps. You see the kids interacting with each other. You see them talking to their teachers or their mentors or their counselors. And there's a buzz. There's an energy, kind of like when you see a great sports team. Like, there's just a chemistry that's happening. Alternatively, you walk into, let's say, a community center that doesn't have that chemistry, isn't sort of buzzing with youth motivation, and it's kind of dead. And you might see kids like sitting around the edge of a court rather than actually playing basketball. And you might see teachers trying to engage students rather than students raising their hands and actively shouting out answers. So I think there's just a lot that you can see and hear and sense when you go out. It's probably why I'm so excited that our board at the Warriors Foundation actually goes out and does site visits themselves, because they're experiencing it. They're seeing it. So Sea Change was really trying to bring those stories to the boards of directors and the staff of foundations that fund the work. And now I just feel like I have the best of all worlds, because I get to go out and do some of that funding myself with that same sense of, I know it when I see it.
This is a truly innovative space that does offer a lot of opportunities for doing things a bit differently. And that is cool to hear that about Sea Change. I think of some friends of mine who work with the Philadelphia 76ers organization were part of a mentoring program where the kids were at a community center or an educational center on computers, and back at the offices, the mentoring, tutoring session was taking place over, you know, the computer system where there was, you know, video camera, and they were able to interact that way, and it wasn't like physically driving to the space, but they were still taking part. There are really great examples of stuff like this where people from not just sports teams, but really just in general society can interact with youth in impactful ways. But I'm seeing it a lot through the sports world and how we do those interactions.
Absolutely. One of the groups that we just funded this year is called iMentor. It may be the group that you're even describing, because it's a lot of mentoring that's actually taking place through technology. And back in the day when I was doing evaluation of nonprofits, I worked with an organization that was trying to do a whole lot of face-to-face mentoring. And there was this emphasis on taking kids out for fun activities. So, oh, let's go to the ball game, or let's go shopping, or let's go get an ice cream. And there was an expectation that the young people were going to kind of spill their guts to this, you know, really kind of a stranger. I mean, but certainly somebody in a position of power, maybe not from their same community. And it was called mentoring. And really, when you broke it down and you asked the kids, what do you want from this person? They wanted practical advice. They wanted to know, how did you get where you are? How can I follow in your footsteps? What should I do about my algebra test this Friday that I haven't studied for? So really specific questions that were actually about helping that young person get ahead. And we missed that in the early mentoring movement. And I think that opportunities now are greater for people who work in corporations and certainly in professional sports to provide direct assistance to young people in a way that doesn't require adopting them. It doesn't require sort of this huge expenditure of time or resource. It just requires sharing kind of some of what you know, maybe sharing your social capital, like helping connect a young person to an opportunity that they wouldn't have because they simply didn't know the right person to ask. Those are huge, huge opportunities for us to give back. And at the Warriors, we certainly try to do that through our volunteer program. And I think a lot of sports teams are doing more and more in terms of volunteering in the community and really connecting through Helping Hands programs like we have here at the Warriors with opportunities to help people out.
I think the blessing here for all of us is to see the different communities that need different kinds of help. I mean, one thing that really struck me last year when I was part of making some video collateral around Kevin Durant opening the Durant Center, part of College Track in Prince George's County, was to see, you know, this is a hardworking, working class neighborhood where folks are at work late, maybe taking the metro in DC back home, and they need a place for their kids to be after school to get mentoring and educational opportunities that the school ends at, you know, 3-4 o'clock. They we need to bridge the gap here. And, you know, Kevin Durant and his foundation, you know, concentrating on that and what that means. And I kind of then think of there are other communities that really need all kinds of different help just beyond bridging the gap between when school ends and when kids go home. And that's where poverty is something seriously to address, even in our country. And, you know, throughout your career, you've really addressed real world implications of what poverty can be in American communities. And thinking of your time with the All In Alameda County work and also the Family Independence Initiative, what were those days? What did those experiences bring you to understand about what we need to be doing here with the Warriors?
Such a great question. I think the first thing that those experiences taught me is that a lot of solutions to poverty are in the communities that are experiencing poverty. So many times we as funders or experts in academia think we have the magic bullet solution, when in fact, people solve poverty every day. If you have to have a meal on the table at 6 o'clock for your kids, you're solving poverty. If that's a challenging meal to produce because you don't have a job that pays a high enough wage, you're probably still as a parent gonna make that happen and you figure it out. So what are the ways in which people are being incredibly resourceful? And what are the barriers they're encountering as they're coming up with their own solutions? And how can we then, as people in the social sector, try to get those barriers out of the way and try to add fuel to people's solutions in the community? So I think that's overarching, really a lesson that I took from that work. Now that I'm here with the Warriors, I see the ways in which a sports team, like many other institutions in our communities, like hospital systems or government institutions, we're an anchor. We're an anchor partner in this community, and especially now that we built Chase Center and we moved here to San Francisco and we have Generation Thrive at our Oakland practice facility, we're dug in. We are literally neighbors, and it's to our benefit and it's to the community's benefit. If we think strategically, and I know we do this with the Warriors through our public affairs department, our community relations department, our foundation, about how are we being the best neighbor? So it has to do with our philanthropy and what we're giving, but it also has to do with local hire. It has to do with our examining our environmental impact. It has to do with thinking about how are we interacting with the local officials who are thinking about affordable housing. We have a role to play as a corporate citizen in all of those areas, and I think we're doing a really good job being thoughtful about that, and we want to be a good neighbor. We want to help. So I think at the end of the day, ending poverty is about everybody coming together and figuring out what's the stone or what's the vegetable or what's the, you know, salt that you're bringing to the soup. And I think we all have a role to play. And I think we're trying to be really conscious and thoughtful about the role that we as the Warriors have to play in the Bay Area.
Well, as we wrap this thing up, and you've been so nice to spend so much time with us, I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, I mean, you are Dr. Moore. You know, this is serious work that you've done from an academic point of view for a very long time, but actually making it practical. And I guess the question I have in mind is just, did you ever imagine that it would be with a sports franchise? And we're beyond that now. It's a sports and entertainment company with Chase Center and all the events and everything we're doing. But the genesis of this is that a basketball team has a vision, wants to execute this. The ownership and Nicole and Joe and Peter Guber and, you know, the Warriors executive board members all serious about not just philanthropy, but also running a serious foundation within the team. Did you think it would align with sports ever? Is that just out of the realms which you thought you'd be doing in your career?
If you had asked me, I never in a million years would have predicted that I'd work for a sports team. Never in a million years. And if you had asked me 5 years ago if I'd be working for the Warriors, I would have said, well, in my dreams. Well, sometimes dreams come true. And I can't imagine a better synergy in terms of the work that I have been able to do with nonprofits in the Bay Area that serve young people, and this role now where I get to not only continue to help support those organizations, but actually work with them and ask them, hey, what do you need to grow? How can Generation Thrive help you? How can we look at partnering a few of you up and helping you collaborate so you're serving these neighborhoods that are impacted by poverty even more? So it's just a tremendous privilege and opportunity, and every day I still kind of pinch myself. It's a wonderful honor to be part of this ecosystem that I think is doing a lot of good in the Bay.
We have a blast doing all the stuff that we do. And let's wrap this up with a speed round that we typically do on these shows. And Crescent City themed. And it's Mardi Gras. And why they call it the Crescent City is that the river runs underneath the city. So it kind of creates a crescent in the city. I'm getting that correct.
Yeah.
So a true New Orleans theme here with three speed round questions, starting with favorite athlete from New Orleans who is either from New Orleans or maybe played for a New Orleans team, and why?
It has to be Pete Maravich, Pistol Pete, and it's because he was my first basketball hero.
Favorite New Orleans musician or group or artistic scene, if that's a way to put it.
Oh, gosh. Well, growing up, I did go to the Jazz Festival every single year, saw a wide variety of acts. I mean, there were very, very famous folks who we all have heard of, like the Marsalises. But I think the first time I heard Clifton Chenier was at the Jazz Fest. I think that's probably a peak experience.
That is incredible. His son, CJ Chenier, was like still on the scene, and I've seen him several times, and if what Melanie's referring to is Zydeco.
Yes.
And you know, it's a very special brand of Absolutely. Music from the region, and that's a great one. Finally, favorite restaurants in and around New Orleans.
I would have to say Tipitina's. Maybe it's not known as much for its food, but the whole scene. And I just think the essence of New Orleans is a place that's kind of gritty, kind of a place where you don't have to dress up to go and have a good time. And just about anything you eat in New Orleans is amazing, whether it's from the corner gumbo stand or it's, you know, from K-Paul's. I mean, there's nothing bad that you're going to get in New Orleans. So anywhere you look.
Well put. And I mean, even from that little place I found that's just kind of near where the arena is, called the Bon Ton Cafe, the most amazing crawfish etouffee, out to a place called Manchu, where you can get these French rolls just filled with shrimp and po' boys, and go around the corner to Kermit's mother-in-law cafe, where he's out in the, you know, courtyard there, Kermit Ruffin's playing music. We could talk New Orleans all day long. We'll get out of your hair. Thank you so much for spending time with us, sharing your story, sharing the stories of what the Warriors Community Foundation is all about and what we're doing in the community. And Melanie Moore, I can't thank you enough for being part of the Warriors podcast.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.